Is an electrical electronic transmission likely to appear in the 1970s?
Yes, if it truly can be worked out to be a cost saving, I think. That's the rationale for this sort of thing. Perhaps there's some functional improvements here, but I think the real rationale for electronic transmission is cost saving. And that work is, I would guess, to a large extent, has to be done.
How far away are the United States Automotive Company manufacturers from standardizing on one type modular evaluation ignition equipment? Parentheses, plug-in.
One comment relative to the aerospace industry: generalized universal test equipment on a large scale has been a miserable failure, it's been my experience. And if you look at all the different dealers, there's not very many people bring Volkswagens into Chevrolet dealers to get them fixed and vice versa. So it's one of a very, very strong and complex economic problem that must be solved in addition to the technical problem.
Is electronic fuel injection system in the future of the automotive industry?
There are two reasons or two areas why fuel injection might be on an automobile. Either it is it contributes significantly to the reduction of emissions, or it is a better or less expensive system than the carburetor. The possibility of electronic fuel injection solving the first one is real, not solving it, but at least contributing to it. But it's very little to do with the electronics. It's a great deal more to do with the way you put the fuel in the engine, I think. Whether it can be made cost competitive, I guess that's a great deal of work will have to be done before we know that.
What is the possibility of someone treating the auto as a system in order to reduce the costs of the electronic equipment?
We do have a group, as you probably read, at the tech center, solely devoted to this problem, and with professionals and technicians, that group's about 100 strong right now. So we're working the problem diligently.
What are the expected critical environmental conditions for automotive electronics?
I think that the most serious one has to be temperature. The temperatures on cars, there's a lot of probably lack of information on that. I talk to people and they always gasp when I give them figures, but we normally do a great deal of our work in the engine compartment part of electronics. It must continually work at 250 degrees or from minus 20 to 250 degrees. We do a great deal of testing as high as 300 degrees. So we feel probably that's the most critical environmental condition. The second one, in my judgment, is electrolytic corrosion. Electrical equipment is all very subject to electrolytic corrosion. How do you handle it? How do you package it? How do you make connections reliably? This great deal of work goes on in all automotive companies trying to solve that problem. And frankly, at Chrysler, in our last two devices we brought out, simply even totally encapsulated them. We sealed our connections and encapsulated them, and that's been quite successful from protection against corrosion.
Airbags. Will the auto companies install same, and will an anticipatory sensor be used?
We're all trying very hard to engineer an airbag system that we think is a feasible one. The sensor, the question's an appropriate one, is one of the most serious feasibility questions in the airbag system. We have not, nor are we aware of anybody else having seen a completely satisfactory sensor. A sensor that has the functional reliability and the accuracy to discriminate between an accident and a non-accident. This is an area that we're extremely interested in, the ingenuity of the electronics industry or any other industry that can help us solve that problem.
when will the United States manufactured semiconductors be competitively priced to offshore assembled units? That's really a very good question, but it's not an easy question to answer. It's a complex question. But you will note that in almost every case tonight, when somebody said, when will we do this, when will we do that, when will we do the other thing, it gets down basically to when we can demonstrate an improvement in the cost of ownership to the fellow who buys the car. So it really gets down that none of these applications are possible until we can get the cost down. And this cannot be done with U.S. labor as long as they are manufactured using high labor content. It's not necessary that semiconductors be manufactured using high labor content. Assembly operations can be and have been mechanized in the past. When they are efficiently and properly mechanized, it turns out that they can be manufactured in the United States as effectively as they can offshore. Trouble is, the technology has been changing so dynamically in the first 20 years of the semiconductor industry that we have neither been able to afford the time nor the money to effectively mechanize everything that's being produced. There are some very prime examples where it has been done effectively. It certainly is the goal of the semiconductor industry to do it. The semiconductor industry, I know, is working on it throughout the industry very diligently, and we will see various parts become mechanized over the next 10 years, and as they do, those particular operations will be brought back to the United States, even though they may now be overseas. Will each automotive panelist for General Motor Chrysler state what are the three most realistic applications of automotive electronics for primary control functions in order of priority and when?
Clearly, the industry is working very, very hard at the current time on both emission control and safety systems. Certainly, I expect that in that arena are the next three high-priority systems, but I don't know which they are at this point.
All these things are being worked on extensively, but just which ones, I don't know either.
I think we probably haven't stressed enough, or we may even have overstressed it, and you disregard the situation or the condition, and that is the cost of ownership. Relative to what are the priorities, there are the four basic forcing functions that I mentioned earlier, which was the wherever we can provide the customer with a more cost-effective product and a superior product, we will. And then there are the other three, which are essentially government requirements of safety. Well, I said there were 14 motor vehicle safety standards that are being proposed for this decade, which may require electronics. There's the emission control, and the third one is the Hart Bill S-967 that requires a very diligent review of automated diagnostics on vehicles. Probably the first electronic item that is going to come out, or the first two, if the first one may not be quite electronic, is the buzzer to warn you that you're going to have to fasten your seatbelt to get the annoyance to go away. And then the second one may well be the ignition interlock, which may require some logic in the belt system through to the starting solenoid. And then that's probably followed by whatever electronics you would have in your crash sensor if you're wise enough to buy a General Motors crash sensor. You got the same train that runs through the emission control system. But to say exactly what they're going to be is very difficult. As you know, the airbag effective date has changed every year for the last 3 years, I think. So that is the so-called moving target we refer to.
Automobiles are part of everyone's life in the developed nations, and we quite naturally take pride in our knowledge of the motor car. But those of us who have been active in the expansion of electronics into computers, control, communications, or medicine, just to name a few fields, have sometimes felt that at least the U.S. manufacturers were not being courageous enough. Their heavily cost-centered approach toward innovation comes out clearly enough in the panel session you have just heard. Perhaps it is rightly the Europeans, sometimes building their cars for privileged classes and with lower labor rates than in the U.S., who should provide a laboratory for experimentation, as they have done in the case of radial tires, disc brakes, and electronic fuel injection. And of the European manufacturers, none is better known in the U.S. than Volkswagen. This recognition is in no small part due to an aggressive and clever advertising program. In the spring of 1972, who in the U.S. could have missed the advertising for Volkswagen's automated self-diagnosis system, featuring a plug mounted in every new VW? Through the help of VW of America's public relations man, Herb Williamson, we arranged an interview with Karl-Heinz Keller, who directs the introduction of this automated diagnostic equipment in the U.S. We now shift you to Beetlehaven in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, that is, VW of America headquarters, where Carl is telling us about this program.
Volkswagen Advanced Diagnosis System will be introduced later in this year, 1972. What we are especially doing here is preparing the unit, which is already introduced in most of the European countries, for this U.S. market, which needs special updating, special technical solution in regard to UL approval.
What broad things are included in the tests, and what major things may be left out?
In the area of testing cars, you have the choice between two basic concepts. One is the onboard test, and logically, the other one would be the off-board test. Now, Volkswagen decided for the off-board test because of economic reasons. We found out that if you would like to get all the answers by sensors and probes installed in a car, this car would be no economic car at all anymore. So in order to have the customer a quite fairly information about the condition of his car, we build a equipment or a unit which tests the car from the outside by asking questions, more or less. And we found out that this is the most economic way to do it, to get evaluations. Now, it might become in the future important that some of the safety-related items should be tested on board.
Could you describe the principal elements of the system which are in the car?
There is not too much into the cars in regard to sensors or so, what is mostly expected. There is one sensor in the battery which measures the exit level. That's more or less a probe. Then we do have one real sensor on the flywheel for getting a signal of the upper dead point center. And there's an additional sensor at the distributor. These three sensors are giving us almost the important signals we need in order to find out about the position of the engine, whether the pistons are in the upper point or lower, and the timing.
And then is one of the philosophies that you don't attempt to sense something which the mechanic can observe for himself easily in a garage test?
There are, of course, not all the tests automatic. This is one of the points we have to be aware of right from the beginning. Those tests, like, for example, tire tread or windscreen wiper blades or something, cannot be tested automatically because there is no way to do it. Those tests who are automatically tested are completely automatic, and no mechanic has to evaluate anything because it's just done in a way that the computer gets all the actual values which are coming from the cars and how the car is performing. They are reported into the computer, and from there the printout is made.
But your system does give some discipline to the testing of the things which are not tested automatically.
In order to have all the necessary evaluation done and really done properly, what we expect, a handheld unit is prepared. And on this handheld input unit, the mechanic sees all the tests he has to do. Now, whether they are automatic or not is not a question. The automatic tests are just shown on the handheld input unit. The mechanic has to do nothing, whilst with the mechanical checks, such I mentioned already, he has to give his evaluation.
Figure 1 is an artist's rendition of the test system. In Figure 2, we see the business end of the measuring system, here shown with the handheld unit hanging in its bracket. The card is plastic with a punched hole pattern for up to 150 tests.
He has a little screen on that handheld input unit. He's asked questions, and he has to give the answers.
Does the system involve a mini-computer or the equivalent of a mini-computer?
There is just one report, and there is one computer, and this computer evaluates one car. So there is no relation so far to any central computers or any evaluation in regard to, for example, how many parts or what time or what kind of repair steps are necessary, which can only be done by a so-called major computer or online system, which we are planning for the future.
In terms of a comparison with non-computerized testing, what are the economics of a computerized system?
Compared to the tests we did before, that means just manual tests with analog readings on normal test equipment, we save about now 50% of the time we used before.
Is there any way to detect the difference between a sensor failure and a test failure?
No, but as I mentioned already, we have already 3 sensors, and today's technology in those sensors we use is really so advanced that we don't expect any major breakdowns or false defects. We have this experience already in Germany, where about 600,000 cars are running with sensors, and this was not a major problem we got at all.
Volkswagen has had experience with electronic equipment in the cars before in the form of the fuel injection system in your fastback and squareback.
It is a system which is now developed since about 3 or 4 years by very well-known German companies such like Bosch. And we had some troubles in the beginning, but we see this already from our warranty reports quite good. The problems are stretched out since about a year now. There is no problem at all.
This present system, I believe you mentioned, Siemens has been cooperating.
Yes, this system, the diagnosis system, is developed by Volkswagen and produced in conjunction with Siemens AG for the German and U.S. market, and Hartmann and Braun, which is another well-known company for other European markets.
About how many dealers do you expect to have this equipment eventually in the U.S.?
We have planned to make this a nationwide program. That means all the about 1,200 Volkswagen dealers will have the diagnosis equipment by the end of May next year.
Normally, each dealer would have a single setup to handle the amount of business that he requires?
Yes, naturally there are bigger dealers, and that means up to 16, 18 tests a day. They have to have 2 units or more, depending on their business there.
Each unit is equipped as a standalone unit.
There are plans to hook a unit up, as I mentioned, to have a central computer unit where some results of the evaluation done by this unit are fed in order to get out more recommendations to a mechanic. That means he is not already informed about the failure, he already gets the information. What he has to do in order to solve the problem.
That's very interesting. Would you also imagine putting inventory into the computer such that he would know whether the spare part were available?
Exactly. This is the second step we would like to do. After a checkout, the computer evaluates any problem in the engine compression, he would get a printout on what number of parts, what kind of parts, with parts prices, flat rate times, and so on are needed for this repair.
You will be able to equip older Volkswagens with the equipment necessary to use this diagnosis.
We can check older cars by an adapter cable. There are with each unit adapter cables supplied, and so far we can go back till 66 model year and check also those cars with, not having a plug.
In your testing, is any provision yet made for monitoring pollutant output from the exhaust of the cars?
No, we have good reasons to not include it in the diagnosis tests. Our maintenance is set up in three parts. First is the diagnosis in order to find out any failures or problems the car has. The second step would be the repair. And the third step would be the quality control. As during the repair sequence, or the setup, for example, of the engine or carburetor could be changed. That means the carburetor could be, or the results in means of the exhaust gas could change towards what we found when the car was diagnosed. We have to do that at the end in order to find out that the mechanic has the engine set up correctly, and then there is a exact evaluation about the emission and even the performance, about the performance of the whole engine. So this is not part and cannot be part of the diagnosis, which is right at the beginning. The exhaust gas has to be checked when the car is going to the street.
How much training would a mechanic require in order to be able to operate this equipment intelligently?
One reason why we developed this kind of system is the availability of manpower, and we built that system in a way that every mechanic can use it, can handle it. There is nothing sophisticated on the equipment. He has just to start the equipment by pushing a button, and then he has to do the evaluation, what he has to do even without a computer also.
What benefits does the consumer derive from this equipment?
The major benefit is time saving and more accuracy. So we are in a period where manpower is very short, and to get a good trained mechanic is really a problem. What comes to the benefit of every customer, because he is completely free from any human errors, and he can really rely on what the system tells him, because this is done automatically and there is no possibility of errors.
Who will maintain these computers?
Service for this equipment was really one of our biggest concerns. We made arrangements with some of the biggest American computer manufacturers, which is Honeywell. Our 1,200 units are serviced by 41 Honeywell service stations, and each service station has at least two men specially trained on that, and also they are equipped with all the necessary spare parts. Besides of that, we have spare parts stocked at the dealer level, at Volkswagen dealer level, and we have arranged for an exchange program. So, for example, all the printed boards and so on are available as exchange parts, and they are. And probably I have to add here that the system generally is designed with a so-called 70% self-servability. That means 70% of all the problems possible can be solved by the dealer. He calls via a hotline to the Honeywell service station. He gets the right comments, and he uses the parts he has in stock, and the computer will run after a while.
May I ask, will the dealers lease or buy this equipment from Volkswagen?
Well, there are either way. Whatever a dealer will decide, he can do. Most of the Volkswagen dealers have already decided to lease it. We have already so-called letters of intent for about over 1,000 units here in our house, which are all based on leasing.
And do you expect dealers other than Volkswagen dealers to make use of this equipment? Is this a possibility? Or?
Well, generally, there is a possibility to use this equipment also for other cars, yes. Now, there is one prerequisite, which all the other cars don't have today. This is a plug. So until a car has no plug, it's really probably not too interesting to have this equipment.
Now Mr. Keller and I join Jan Zalborg, a Dutch automotive engineer who is involved in the U.S. project. The intent is to go through the diagnosis step by step. However, as you will see, we don't take time for the manual steps. The subject is a small yellow beetle, one of hundreds to be found at VW headquarters. In Figure 3, Jan Zalborg is shown playing the role of diagnostician, with the umbilical connected to the auto socket and the system in the background.
All right, the Volkswagen has been backed up into the bay, and we've plugged in an umbilical cord and connected into the place normally occupied by the oil dipstick a temperature probe. Mr. Zalborg, would you explain the various parts of the computer here to us? There's a handheld device and some other parts.
Okay, this is the computer, and part of it, this part, is the card reader.
That's the part with the card sticking up out of the top of it.
Right.
Down on below and on the right is...
This one is the printer with the diagnosis forms inside. This in the fanfold, so about 30 to 50 forms can be stored at a time.
And each one is for one car?
That's right.
Looks very much like a computer printer.
It's about the same.
Okay. Now the printer resets the paper till it's just at the right position. The car is plugged in, and the card reader is turned on. You hear it advancing. It's now stopped.
Now everything is reset to position number one.
On the first test, we look into the little handheld device, and it says, steering ignition lock worn light. The particular sequence here is the sequence used in the German tests. But I'd like to know what that particular instruction to the mechanic meant.
The first test, that's a visual test whereby the diagnostician checks the steering and ignition lock in the car. And as soon as he thinks that is okay, then he evaluates his findings with the 10th manual control unit.
That's a manual test that he makes to see
that's
that
right.
Those operate. And so he pushes
if
the plus.
Good, he plus punches
all right.
The plus.
Now,
if it's bad, he
right.
evaluates
now,
the negative.
When he pushes the plus, presumably the next test will come up.
Cannot advance before he evaluates his previous test.
If he pushes plus, the report will show plus. If he pushes minus, the report will show...
I see. Column.
Were he to push the third button, what would happen?
Then you just skip the test.
So now I evaluate, and you will hear the printer printing out the plus sign.
The next test comes up, and the next test is brake pedal free play. So this he tests inside the car.
Manual as well, then.
And he can hold this in his hand, can he not, when he's getting in the car? Because it's got a good long length of cord.
We are able to select all those single checks. So, for example,
independently,
if you would like to know something about the engine compression, for example, you advance the computer right to the chest. Check number 25, for example, by these buttons here, and you start your check right at chest number 25, and you get a simple readout or printout about the compression of your
and
engine.
And you can also stop after one or after
right.
several. Let's try to move on to something where we have to start the engine, let's say.
As soon as I evaluate brake warning light, then we start with a complete automatic sequence. The computer will take over. And the diagnostician has nothing to do. And that will the battery voltage and the load, the brake lights, the battery electrolyte level, the turn indicator left and right, and the heated rear window.
And all this will take place click, 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 click.
In a matter of seconds, right. So now evaluate the brake warning light, and the computer will take over. Now we have about 10 seconds delay because the... battery is put under a heavy load.
Now it's going through the automatic sequence, and the lights are moving, and the printout is advancing, and the card is advancing. And the measurement is read in a three-digit digital output, and there is another three-digit that shows the particular tests.
Figure 4 in your notes shows the actual printout produced. The wheel alignment results are simulated, since the car was not moved completely into the test area. Other automatic sequences are accurate.
So now we're down to the next test, which is not in the automatic sequence, and that would be the tire pressure, and so on.
As soon as we come to the position wheel alignment, the projectors will be switched on automatically by the computer. The projector throws a light cross on the mirror, which is reflected back to this measuring plate. And depending where the light cross hits these phototransistors, from there the wheel alignment is taken by the computer.
So you will get toe in, and you will get
total toe and the camber left and camber right. And the diagnostician has to turn the steering wheel slightly until the light cross hits these two triggering transistors. And then the alignment is taken automatically, evaluated, and printed out in degrees and minutes.
This is a test that is very time-consuming in non-automated form.
Conventional tools, yes.
And the device, the mirror that fastens to each wheel is snapped on and centered automatically.
It rests on the brake drum, and that part is machined, so you're sure that it's a flat surface. We have to take off the hubcap.
Now we see we saw a cross of light on this device, and no doubt we will get a printout.
We have actually two light beams. Each of these light beams is going to one wheel. From here, a mirror reflects this light coming out in a light cross. Now, this light cross triggers, as you see here, several photoelectric cells. In order to start the measurement, all a mechanic has to do is to turn the wheel. And as you see now, the light beam reflected by the mirror, which is attached to the wheel, triggers the start of the measurement. Here, you see these two photoelectric cells. These are the signal cells. As soon as the light cross catches these cells, the measuring starts. Now, these are all photoelectric cells on this side, as you see here.
Vertical row.
The vertical row, and we have on the other side the same.
So one wheel is used as the starting point for the measurement, and that's the left front wheel.
Right.
Yes, and on the right front wheel, both horizontal and vertical scales have a row of photoelectric cells so that a measurement can be made. So the measurement is made at the time that the light beam from the first, from the left wheel passes the turn-on detector. The measurement is made on the right front wheel instantaneously, really.
Same time.
It's rather interesting to speculate on the sequence of tests. There's some manual tests, some automatic tests, some more manual tests. Was there a scheme devised for the movement of the mechanic around the car or some other thing?
Done as economically as possible, that he doesn't have to walk around too much. So that has been established through time studies and what would be the most efficient way to move around for him.
Now, will the sequence in different models be different?
No, the sequence is the same.
Because
only the amount of tests, that will differ. And that is programmed into the program card. We start, say, with 72 positions, and for type 1, maybe only 63 are applicable.
Type 1 is the Super Beetle now, or the...
Right. And then the program card will take out the ones applicable to that particular vehicle.
Dr. Beam, you mentioned the interesting questions about the number of tests we are doing. Now, as you see this program card here, you see about 150 different rows here. Each row means one test we can do.
And this is really a binary card with about 32 bits of information define one test.
Right. And we are ending up now with our actual test sequence at about number 72. We are going up until 150. That means all the different we have still available for additional tests to do.
As on a Porsche, for example.
As on a Porsche, exactly.
So we load this automatic sequence, start a turn and compression test.
Now, this requires the starting of the engine and then...
All the diagnostician does is crank the engine. The engine is shorted automatically by the computer. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the engine starts, that means the engine has been given free by the computer.
Yes.
And the measurement has
been
taken.
How is compression measured?
If you have to crank the engine, you need a lot of power.
Starter motor current peaks.
Right. Whenever the engine has to overcome the compression in one particular cylinder, you will get a current peak.
And the clutch must be in or the transmission in
neutral?
No,
transmission in neutral, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. So and all those peaks are measured, and
yes,
they in turn cause a voltage drop, and that is measured over certain lengths on the battery ground strip. And then, of course, you have to know the firing order of the engine, because we send it out in cylinder 1, 2, 3, 4 in numerical order, while the engine's firing order is 1, 4, 3, 2.
For that, we
have a sensor on the number 1 spark plug wire, which gives a signal whenever number 1 fires.
Does the computer sort out which time corresponds?
Yep.
And detects when the peak comes?
When the peak comes, right.
So the speed of cranking is not critical then?
It is critical because it should be between, I think, 200 and 300.
It requires then that the engine be cranked for this particular series of tests.
Right.
And then this is followed by a horn test, which can be done sitting
this
in the car.
This is manual because that's a safety-related item. You could do it electrically, but the sound is very important.
Yes.
Then the next one is again a...
Automatic
sequence, the regulator current, the distributed dwell angle, the generator current, and the kickdown switch.
And we get back down to manual ones with coolant
and
level,
from
or?
From there on, it's all manual, right?
I see.
Coolant level we will not have. That's for the K70. That's a model we will not have on the market this year.
So let's see how long it takes the computer on this cranking test. He's getting the car cranking it. The computer has made one measurement. The engine is going. It's on position 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, and has advanced through all the compression tests. The engine did start there, did it, eventually?
Eventually started.
The computer released the short on the ignition. Do you want to advance this thing a few times? Now, the machine cannot be advanced in a capricious fashion. The engine is started again. There's test 49, which is another automatic one.
Generator
tests, dwell angle. Dwell angle done from measuring current in the distributor?
Right. Yeah, that's the...
In the coil.
Time of your point.
Yes.
Okay, now
we've completed the automatic sequences, which takes us to position 58, and now we're advancing manually. And the card comes out. So that's the Volkswagen self-analysis system. The car has analyzed itself, and we have this test sheet.
You see here we've got a couple of minus signs here.
Uh-oh, the battery charge is low.
Right, so what a mechanic would do now, as he gets this printed sheet, he's going to evaluate what he sees here now in the printout. He definitely would advise to have the battery loaded. He would probably advise, the wheel alignment. You see, we got two minus printouts, so we know the wheel alignment must be corrected. Distributor dwell angle is another thing which obviously is not correct.
Now, the minus sign, when there is an analog measurement, the minus sign must mean it's out of limits. Is that right?
Right.
Well, as you see here, we got into the same instance.
For the automatic test, we have an upper and a lower limit, and if it's in between, it will be evaluated with a plus sign. If it's outside too low or too high,
it will be evaluated with a minus sign.
And these can be reset, the limits,
right,
easily?
Right, no, it has to go back into the workshop for repairs and adjustment.
But in the terms of the computer, if you wanted to reset limits on something...
You cannot, because the limits are set in the program card. They are factory specifications, nominal specifications.
So they can't play around with the way the machine works?
No, they cannot pull it up.
So are there any other areas there you want to come in?
No, we have a lot of minuses because we didn't attach the wheel mirrors.
Okay. And there's a minus on the current regulator.
Yeah, that can be related back to the bad battery.
Yes.
That's a relation.
And we have some minuses in some of the other tests, which were, I believe, put in there so that they wouldn't all be pluses. We actually didn't follow the full set of manual tests here.
When you said, well, I think we are almost over the test now and we would like to run the test completely through, and Mr. Salberg mentioned, I can do it. I think this is quite a good example that a mechanic cannot even skip tests. He has to do the evaluation, otherwise he can't even plug out the plug from the car.
Oh, really?
Yes. So... I think it was quite a practical...
It is what we would call almost idiot-proof.
Yes, even not having idiots here.
Is this the wave of the future? Only time will tell. If the movement of integrated circuits into other applications is any guide, we will indeed see highly complex controllers in future automobiles. Just when, it seems... is mainly up to the public, the federal government, and the semiconductor suppliers. In IEEE, the place where the action is the Vehicular Technology Group. Our thanks to Bob Mazzola, Director of Education for the group, who arranged for the taping of the panel session. We invite you to look in the September 1972 issue of IEEE Spectrum for an interesting article on Automotive Electronics by Chuck Beardsley, Associate Editor. Until the next soundings, this is Editor Walt Beam wishing you safe and economical driving.